I got so much stuff going on. I figured that I finished that 2-hour set yesterday. I hadn't really eaten too well yesterday. My wife on Tuesdays found an amazing pizza place. I mean, good pizza, really great pizza, that does major discounts on Tuesdays for, old people. We qualify. She went and picked it up. I ate a few pieces. Before an hour was up after I got off the air, I passed out, hard sleeping. Slept for about 3 hours, which means I woke up sometime around, a little after 8 o'clock last night, my time, and didn't go back to sleep till after 4 in the morning. Hey! Good evening, my friends. Jeff Bennett here. Republic Broadcasting Network. It's Wednesday. And today, as we always do, or we do most times, we're going to deal with a little issue called To Health With You. I don't know how to explain this, because I think more so over the last 4 weeks, the amount of time that I've had to put into doing these 2-hour sets, not just on Wednesdays with health, but some of the other issues we've been dealing with, have been unbelievable. That's a part of why I was up darn near all night last night. Didn't get to sleep till after 4 in the morning. And I don't even know what time I woke up, 9 o'clock, 9:30, maybe 10 o'clock. I don't even know. I've lost track. And massive amount of work went into working on this program. But this has become very commonplace for me. I've never had this kind of these kind of issues before with, almost 29 years being on the air. An interesting piece came to me, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and I lost track of it. It's been almost a month since I came across this thing called State of the American Healthcare. And of course, as Hippocrates would warn us, first do no harm, except that when you start dealing with emergency room people, staffing, private equity, big pharma, first do no harm, what, to our bottom line? Once the envy of the world, American medical care continues to be infected with leftist woke ideology, my friends, with abysmal and terrifying outcomes. Some of what I'm going to share with you in this segment will upset a few of you. Don't let it. You have to listen all the way through to understand it. So under the term health equity, the only parameter that matters appears to be a person's melanin level, not his need for timely medical treatment. And consequently, more than 10 million non-black Americans with chronic kidney disease may have seen their treatments or transplants delayed because of policy changes enacted after 2020. And some of those patients, maybe some of you, now face greater risk of death because national transplant organizations have embraced racial activism, which is all crap. Patients of all races deserve a formula that accurately estimates their individual kidney function, not one that favors one racial group at the expense of others. Of course, then there's the Advil Pain Equity Project to end systemic pain racism. It should be noted, by the way, that Advil is owned by Pfizer. In fact, as was explained in FortuneWell, according to a study, 3 out of 4 black people believe there is bias in how their pain is diagnosed. Now, Advil, a popular pain relief brand, is aiming to address inequity in pain diagnosis and treatment with the Advil Pain Equity Project. And as part of the multi-year project, Advil is awarding grants to the Morehouse School of Medicine and the BLKHLTH, that's Black Health. That's an Atlanta-based nonprofit to support the development of patient resources and a course for medical school students. The purpose to address pain equity both in and outside of medical facilities. Now, dare one ponder the possibility that this is merely a plan to sell $50 million more in pills to black people, disguised as a fight to end pain racism? Well, on the other hand, keynote speaker at the 2023 Social Justice Awards, sponsored by Institutional Diversity and Equity, author, physician, and thought leader Dr. Uschi Blackstock, founder of the Advancing Health Equity, is committed to dismantling racism in healthcare and closing the gap in racial health inequities. To me, I find all this pure bullshit. Now it's 2024. Is the American patient caught between the greed of pharmaceutical companies and the rise of left-wing social justice activists? And does this not even begin to analyze the spiraling healthcare costs that have long confounded Americans? Most of you know what I've been going through for the last 2.5 odd years. Although I've taken control of some things because I'm fed up with it all the times that I've had to go to ER, my out-of-pocket expense to go to the emergency room was a flat $90 for well over 2 years. Now, son of a gun, something's wrong with the insurance because now my out-of-pocket is $135. That's a hell of an increase. Now, it's not that it's big bucks, but do the percentages. Go from $90 to $135. That's pretty profound. Well, let's be honest. Faith in American medicine has certainly been tarnished by the treatment afforded those healthcare workers who dared to question the federal government's edicts concerning the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. One of those people I know, well, I like to call her my nurse. She and I have never spoken. We've never met. But I know what she looks like. It's Justin O. Smith's daughter, my nurse. Ha ha ha. Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Ladapo. Oh, the reason I bring up Justin's daughter, because she is a nurse. And yeah, she dared to question the federal government's edicts concerning the COVID-19 vaccines, refused to take them. They threatened to terminate her, but they realized that no, her expertise was far more needed. COVID-19 vaccines are not appropriate for use in human beings. That, according to Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Ladapo. He called for a complete halt of the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, and he issued the warning. based on overwhelming evidence that the COVID-19 shots that Pfizer and Moderna assured us were safe are contaminated with plasmid DNA. So now we consider the fact that the government continues to purposefully censor truthful information. In fact, Dr. Aaron Cariotti, a psychiatrist who challenged the University of California Irvine vaccine mandates, was fired for questioning. It has led to what is being called the most important free speech case in a generation. It's known as Missouri versus Biden, although I think its official name is Murphy versus Missouri. In 2023, Cariotti asserted that, quote, although this case is still relatively young, and at this stage the court is only examining it in terms of plaintiffs' likelihoods of success on the merits, the evidence produced thus far depicts an almost dystopian scenario. During the COVID-19 pandemic, a period perhaps best characterized by widespread doubt and uncertainty, the United States government seems to have assumed a role similar to an Orwellian Ministry of Truth. In a book, If I Betray These Words, by Wendy Dean, an MD, it is patently clear that doctors, nurses, and other healthcare providers are increasingly forced to consider the demands of other stakeholders before the needs of their patients. And this moral injury began long before the COVID-19 pandemic, but surely it has accelerated. And moreover, as would be expected in leftist Marxist ideology, my friends, of course, anti-Semitism has crept into the U.S. medicine as well. Is the terrorist organization Hamas gaining a foothold in U.S. medicine? Her words continue as saying that as if the anti-Semitism that has swept through Harvard needed an accelerant, a growing group of professors and other employees inaugurated the spring semester by rolling out the university's chapter of Faculty and Staff for Justice in Palestine, part of a new U.S. network to support the National Students for Justice in Palestine, an organization that called the October 7th massacre in Israel's historic win for the Palestinian resistance. Well, significantly, more than 40% of the 112 signatories at the FSJP's founding statement, that's Faculty and Staff for Justice in Palestine, they were from Harvard's Medical and Public Health. And among the FSJP founding statement signers were practitioners in internal medicine, psychiatry, pediatrics, and cancer care. And you count all of this among many worrisome signals that the anti-Semitism rolling U.S. undergrad programs has bled into the healthcare field as well, particularly among younger doctors and medical students. It has implications for medicine. Physicians are brazenly posting comments in their personal social media that vilify Israel while calling for its dissolution and rail against Zionist doctors with comments such as, quote, the presence of Zionism in U.S. medicine should be examined as a structural impediment to health equity. This all gets insane, doesn't it? And to add to... to add to this cauldron, consider the effect of illegal immigrants who seek medical treatment in U.S. hospitals, resulting in billions of dollars in unpaid health care costs. Denver and Arizona hospitals have experienced a rise in uncompensated care costs due to the influx of illegal invaders. Well, New York City and California now offer free health care for illegals. Did you know that? In a report titled The Historic Dollar Cost of DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas' Open Borders Policy Phase 4 Interim Report, issued by the House Committee on Homeland Security, it was revealed that the United States is paying $451 billion in annual costs, with much of it to reimburse providers for care for illegal immigrants who do not pay. And finally, Stanley Goldfarb, former associate dean of curriculum at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, explained in the Wall Street Journal that during his term as associate dean of curriculum at the University of Pennsylvania's Medical School, he was chastised by a faculty member for not including a program on climate change in the course of study. Why have medical schools become a target for inculcating social policy when their stated purpose of medical education, since Hippocrates, has been to develop individuals who know how to cure patients? A new wave of educational specialists, my friends, is increasingly influencing medical education. They emphasize social justice that relates to healthcare only partially. And this approach is the result of a progressive mindset that abhors hierarchy of any kind and the social elitism associated with the medical profession in particular. And these educators focus on eliminating health disparities, ensuring that the next generation of physicians is well equipped to deal with cultural diversity, which might be worthwhile goals, but teaching these issues is coming at the expense of rigorous training in medical science. You see, the prospect of this new politicized medical education should worry everybody. You, I, all Americans. And as concerns about social justice have taken over undergrad education, graduate schools have raced to develop curricula that will steep future educators in the same ideology, or as I referred to it for many years, idiotology. Question I pose to you, where will all of this end? Where will it lead? Medical school bureaucracies have become bloated, as they have in every other sphere of education. Curricula will increasingly focus on climate change, social inequities, gun violence, bias, and other progressive causes only tangentially related to treating illness. And so will many of your doctors in the coming years. I'm not looking forward to the day that my doctor, who I have an appointment with next Monday, just some general follow-up stuff, he's not far off from retiring. I'm not looking forward to what I may have to find as a replacement. As we face all of this in our lives, oncologists, cardiologists, surgeons, other medical specialists, they're in quite short supply. Most of the heart surgeons that we have in this area happen to be based from the Middle East. Specialists who are produced must master more crucial material, even though less and less of their medical school education is devoted to basic scientific knowledge. It's pretty simple. Ultimately, my friends, woke medicine will destroy the Hippocratic Oath. The idea of race-based healthcare is morally unethical. It is repugnant. It is intrinsically destructive. Welcome to the modern era of medicine. I recognize so much in this piece that I've just shared with you is written by Eileen Toplansky for the American Thinker just about a month ago. And I could add so much to this from personal experience situations, things that I have purposely and personally witnessed or experienced. It's simply amazing when you work with a bunch of so-called medical practitioners. And I use that term very lightly because to me it's medical practicers who did or attempted to do work on me in emergency room situations, most of which dealt with my catheter, which of course I've not had now for quite some time. But what they tried to do to service my needs was a joke. I had four people that I worked with in the early days of those issues. And when I began to experience some very intense issues with my catheter, I had to go in one night. Four people. In fact, I remember coming in, and they're telling me it was going to be quite a wait. The whole emergency room was loaded. Every seat out there was loaded. And I sat there and waited. I finally went up there and said, let me explain something to you. Do you understand that I am bleeding? And a physician heard me. They did not even have a temporary bed in the emergency room. They had just cleaned one in preparation to bring someone else in ahead of me. The doctor said, come in right now. It was quite interesting. I dealt with four people, Chad Comer, Lauren Voll, Kurt Tengberg, and a guy named Bryce, who happened to be a medical student. It was Kurt and Bruce that took me into that temporary bed. And when they realized what was going on, they found a place for me and moved me back in there. This crew of four people came out. They taught me so much about what the medical profession had to go through to deal with this catheter situation. They had to remove the existing one. They had to replace it. They had to flush me out. Instead of the single tube, we came in with three tubes. Each tube served a different purpose. One was a flusher. The other one acted like a vacuum. Chad Comer, and I've talked about him before without mentioning his name. Chad, you know, when they put you up on these beds and they suspect you might pee on the things or you might bleed or whatever the case may be, they put special pads between your body and the temporary bed you're sitting here laying on. And it is to absorb liquid, drainage, like I say, blood, urine, whatever the case may happen to be. He took one of those pads and drew a picture on it in pencil, showing me and the other people that we were working with exactly what was going to happen and why and how it's to be done. I learned the exact proper way that night. Oh, by the way, that pad that he wrote on, it's in my home. No, it was never used. It was an extra pad. He wrote on it, drew on it, drew a picture, and I have it. And maybe one of these days I may take it back to the hospital. I'd like to get up and speak at a meeting and pay homage to those who taught me so much and cared enough about the patient so much. These things are becoming excessively rare, people. It's unbelievable. Simply unbelievable. But as I state on our website, drkelly.net, self-responsibility must be the key to our health, spiritual, financial, and physical. And knowledge is the key to our success. And that is what this group of people gave me that night, knowledge. Oh, I'll tell you what, I had more issues with nurses and RNs and physician's assistants and even doctors over the next year, year and a half after that, because I had the answers and they didn't. They were taught to do things a certain way. Slam and dunk, that's what they were taught to do. I don't know, it's pretty interesting. We live in very strange times, my friends. And so, self-responsibility. That is what we must accept. Not that we are doctors, or nurses or medical practitioners or magicians. But we must take a degree of responsibility and understand what we're dealing with. One of the things is maybe like getting a taste of our own medicine. Interesting piece I came across today. The simple question is, why don't patients take the medications that are prescribed to them? The reasons are many. This is a short piece written by a doctor, Dr. Douglas Zipes. And this was published on, believe it or not, the Saturday Evening Post in October of this past year. He says, being a physician has been a joyful but demanding endeavor, perhaps more challenging now than ever before. Patients armed with the latest information gleaned from social media sources often confront doctors with misinformation they've just read about. Doctors are stressed keeping up with medical advances that increase exponentially, doubling the amount of new knowledge every 2 to 3 months. Business of medicine requires many hours of paperwork, stealing time from direct patient interactions. Of course, then there's artificial intelligence, you know, AI. Might help with that burden, but it creates its own challenges. And despite some negatives, the doctor continues, the fulfillment of relieving someone's pain and disability and saving lives is a blessing and cannot be matched by any other profession. Perhaps best crystallized in the advice attributed to Dr. Francis Weld Peabody in a lecture to Harvard medical students almost 100 years ago, when he said the secret of the care of the patients is in caring for the patients. To care for the patients properly requires their cooperation. For example, when a physician gives a patient a prescription for a particular medication, the doctor expects the patient to take said medication as prescribed, but many patients do not. With medication non-adherence occurring half the time in the management of chronic conditions such as diabetes or high blood pressure, non-adherence to prescribed treatment is thought to cause an estimated 125,000 preventable deaths and $100 billion in preventable medical costs every year. I have to go back to that statement about self-responsibility must be the key to our health. I am, for the most part, pretty darn good about taking my medicines. I've begun to learn much about each of the meds. I am currently going through a possible problem with one of my prescriptions, which I've been on now for a year and a half. But this one has gone through a different provider, a different manufacturer. And over the course of the last several weeks, it has actually bothered me to the point I want to go in and talk to the pharmacist and say, how do we get this thing inspected to find out how does it equate with the previous manufactured prescription? That's my self-responsibility. I have to bring this up to the doctors. I've got to go back and see the one pharmacist I trust because he has knowledge and abilities. Hey, so we're going to pick up on this. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to go have a quick dance with Kim, I think. I'm running a little bit late on this. And stick around. More on this subject and much, much more for the next hour and a half. just because I play that tune doesn't mean I'm going outside for a smoke, doesn't mean I'm going down the hallway to go wee-wee. That tune just calms me down. It's interesting. I just put a comment into Michael. It is interesting to me how much more mellow and calm down that I am doing these health-related programs. And I think those of you who have been with me, more so the last 3-4 weeks, I am doing Tuesday and Thursday programs in a massive state of anger. I am in a massive state of anger. And tomorrow, we're going to be sharing some things with you that... I had a long talk with a friend of mine this morning, one of our contributing writers. He's angry. I'm angry. But that's for another day. Before we went to my dance with Kim, the doctor's comment about non-adherence to prescribed treatment is thought to cause an estimated 125,000 preventable deaths and $100 billion in preventable medical costs each year. And the reason for all of this, my friends, are multiple. They include fear of potential side effects experienced personally or observed in others, cost, misunderstanding about the drug, its importance, how to take it, maybe taking too many medications, maybe lack of symptoms. I mean, we can't make an asymptomatic patient less symptomatic, but often medications are taken to prevent future symptoms. What about mistrust, frequently due to misrepresentation of facts about a disease or a medication, or concern about becoming dependent on the medication? And then there's always depression. Some patients may have cognitive impairment, drug or alcohol use, cultural issues, alternate belief systems that counter taking prescribed drugs. Well, improving medication adherence is the responsibility of both the physician and the patient. The doctor needs to explain about the drug, how to take it, the reasons for taking it, and why the benefits outweigh the risks. The patient then needs to raise any concerns not discussed by the doctor. Yeah, sometimes cost is the issue. It's maddening to witness drug companies raising their prices of some medications with profits as the only justification. And this is an issue that I've fought with one of my prescriptions for the last year plus. It was one of my heart pills. It was costing me $130-some-odd every 3 months. So I paid that January of last year. All of a sudden, April comes along, and it's $498. That's my out-of-pocket. Wait a minute. What the hell is going on here? What happened to the insurance? All of a sudden, the insurance is not covering as much? Or has Big Pharma just jacked up the cost of this stuff to bend me over and they'll drive? Well, I went to my doctor and said, Doc, I can't afford this. I got 6 months worth of free meds of that one particular medicine for nothing. He's got samples in his office. Got 3 months. When it came time, I went back and said, I'm not going to fork up that $400 and some. Gave me that or 3 months worth. My heart doctor is actually a good guy. Keep in mind, doctors, physicians, many times are not aware of the cost of the drug they recommend, but have brought to their attention a less expensive form of the drug may be available, often in a generic form, at far more reasonable prices. Look, taking a med over many days or longer requires a change in our respective behavior. And that's difficult for many to incorporate into our busy lives. Well, Mr. Peabody was right. ultimately the care of a patient is a partnership between the doctor and the patient. The doctor promises to diagnose and treat. The patient promises to follow the treatment advice. If either one fails to fulfill their promise, disability and death can follow. My only recommendation is when you're talking with your doctor, please use your brain, use your head, use your mouth. Ask questions. Get a distinct understanding why a particular prescription is being given. What you can expect. That's part of our responsibility. Don't just lay down and say the doctor says, okay, here's a prescription, go get it, and I'll see you in 3 months. No, it's your job to slow the doctor up and get a description of what it's for, how it is supposed to work, and to let you know that if something isn't right, then you come back in to see me, and we'll see what the heck is going on. That's part of your responsibility. We're dealing with a lot of strange stuff. Man, I'll tell you what. I've got stuff I've been building up and sitting on it for quite a while. Large number of postings I've done here in the last 24 to 48 hours. Most of it dealing with cancer. Dr. Kelly .net, drkelley.net. That which I've shared with you this first 30 odd minutes, almost 40 minutes of the program, that's all posted on drkelley.net right now. Some of the other issues, and the one that we typically generally specialize on, deals with cancer. We got a piece published dealing with aggressive colorectal cancer. The claim is it's tied to oral bacterium. Woo. Got another piece dealing with long-term use of popular heartburn drugs can increase the risk of stomach cancer. Whoa. We'll share a little bit of that with you as the next hour and a half or hour and 20 minutes goes by. Another new piece we published up today, signs and symptoms that thyroid cancer is metastasizing. Never thought about that one, did you? Yeah, I've been on a thyroid med for 23, 24 odd years. I never can remember the difference between hypothyroidism and hyperthyroidism. I've got the one that's the least effective. I've been on the same med probably since 2002, 2003. I think 2002. And the only change in that medicine was a decrease in the prescription. And I've remained very solid ever since. I've never had thyroid issues. The tests we used to do every year are now being done every other year, and they still keep coming up with the same answers. And therefore, we remain with what we're doing. What else we got here? So we might talk about thyroid cancer. Might talk about stomach cancer. Because according to this, long-term use of the popular heartburn drugs can increase our risk of stomach cancer. Huh? Use for 1 year and 3 years was associated with a 1.5 minus and a 2.4 fold increase in the risk of stomach cancer. Okay. That's interesting. Proton pump inhibitors. That's a PPI. Popular class of heartburn drugs are linked to stomach cancer, a recent review found. And the review indicates that prolonged use of PPIs exceeding 3 months is significantly associated with an elevated risk of cancer. Shorter term usage appears to pose a comparatively lower risk. Now, in simple terms, dealing with what we're dealing with, PPIs and stomach cancers, etc., I suspect that we're going to reach a certain number of you out there tonight that could be facing some of these issues. PPIs, my friends, are potent drugs that lower stomach acidity. They work by binding irreversibly to protein pumps, proteins in the stomach that release protons. That's a component of stomach acid. And that action prevents the secretion of protons. PPIs are commonly prescribed to treat acid reflux, which occurs when acid in the stomach reverses up the esophagus, causing heartburn. They're also used to treat gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, a more chronic form of acid reflux, as well as gastric and gut ulcers. Do any of these things mean anything to any of you? I certainly hope so. Examples of PPIs include over-the-counter medications such as Omeprazole or Prilosec, Esomeprazole or Nexium, Lansoprazole, that's Prevacid. Some PPIs require prescriptions such as Rabeprazole? What is this, Italian drugs? That's Acifex. What about the Pantoprazole or Protonix? Dexlansoprazole or Dexalant. Those who made this study reviewed several papers investigating the link between PPI use and cancer risk. And they found a link between PPI use and stomach cancer and polyps. No other cancer links were identified. And one of the studies they cited evaluated data from about 2,400 records and found that long-term use for 1 year and 3 years was associated with a 1.5 minus and a 2.4 minus fold increase in the risk of stomach cancer, respectively. Now, this bothers me because my stomach's hurting right now. I don't know why. Well, other research that followed, 3,271 patients who were given PPIs after a Helicobacter pylori infection found that long-term PPI use was associated with a twofold increase in the risk of stomach cancer. And while a study in women found that PPI use was associated with reduced risk of breast, ovarian, and cervical cancer, the authors of the review cautioned against concurrent use of PPIs in cancer treatment, citing studies finding worse outcomes and increased mortality risk. But why the risk? I guess several possible mechanisms may explain how PPIs could contribute to cancer development. And these drugs may disrupt gut microbiome health by increasing the pH of stomach content. And this, the authors continued, may potentially alter the gut microbiome, reduce the diversity and abundance of beneficial bacteria, lead to gastrointestinal inflammation. In turn, this could promote the overgrowth of harmful bacteria that produce carcinogens and increase the risk of said cancer. TPIs may also result in hypergastrinemia, since they increase stomach pH. The stomach may increase in the production of gastrin, a type of protein in the stomach. But gastrin stimulates the growth and activity of certain stomach cells. And the higher the concentration of gastrin, the greater the cell activity and proliferation, which increase the risk of cancer. And so apart from those proposed mechanisms, TPIs also have a wide range of side effects. Increased stomach acid, pH, can lead to indigestion, nutritional deficiencies, bacterial overgrowth, and gut problems. Also linked to infections with bacteria like Helicobacter pylori and Clostridium difficile. I can't pronounce all these words. They got to be Latin. So, Helicobacter pylori infections can cause painful stomach ulcers. And the bacteria survive and proliferate at a pH between 3.5 and 8. A healthy stomach has a pH between 1 and 2. But there are some alternatives to this proton pump inhibitor business. We're going to let this go. There are a couple things to consider, though. Other factors that can affect the sphincter include alcohol, caffeine, and smoking. Oh, and being overweight can also put more pressure on the stomach, which can lead to acid reflux. Oops, excuse me. Yes, 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 my sense of humor is kicking in today. The name of this article is Long-Term Use of Popular Heartburn Drugs Increases Risk of Stomach Cancer. There is access to a video through here. I strongly urge you watch. Dr. Jonathan Wright specializes in natural therapy, said in this YouTube video that 99% of his patients who experience heartburn suffer from insufficient stomach acid rather than excess. Take a look at the video. I am unable to publish the video because you've got to have permission to do so, even though it's on YouTube. You can go look at it on YouTube, but I can't copy and reproduce it on our site, and I'm not going to take the time to request the information. So you want to take a look at this. You know, we're dealing with heartburns, a wide range of issues. I personally grow weary of so much of this stuff now. If I go out at night, do you know where? There's two things that go with me. A small book that I carry. It's got all the contacts of my doctors, my nurses, my appointment scheduled for medical appointments coming up in the next few months, including a very intense meeting with people from VA. The other thing I carry is a leather, it's called a butt pack, I've had for years. And I remember buying it. My kids were little. I had this because, oh, as a Boy Scout leader, whatever was going on, I may take this thing with me. But it's turned out to be my go-to. If something happens, I have to go to ER. I've got complete descriptions of my meds, how many I take a day, how many I've already taken per day, blah, 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 blah. And now so many other people want them. If I go to ER, this thing goes with me. It goes with me. And it's, you know, I got a toothbrush and toothpaste in it and, you know, hand cream and nozzle spray stuff that I can suck up my nose to stop the runny nose. This is the kind of stuff that always goes with me now. It's preparation is all it is. Yeah. We finally determined this pipe leak I've got going on outside, not in my body. And we found out what it is, what's causing it. I'll have that taken care of tonight. But what about the leaks in your body? How do we care for these things? How do we bring it all to a halt? Is it cancer? Urinary issues? Poop issues? Vomitory issues? Brain issues? From a personal standpoint, I get tired of it all. When I would go to ER, as I was being released, I always whipped out that credit card and paid the fee. And it was always $90. And this last time it was, well, don't worry, we'll send you a bill. I said, what do you mean you send me a bill? I said, I always pay when I'm here at the ER. There's been so much personnel change. The new personnel don't understand what the previous personnel, what their job was. Well, they finally got the bill to me at that $135 figure. I'm ticked off about it. That means my insurance company, it's time for us, my wife and I, to start looking for a new one next year. I'm not going to play this game anymore. You know, they got some other BS excuse why the cost of the meds has gone up. Oh, you're outside the box, or you're inside the box, or oh, you're jammed, you're rammed, you're this, that, and the other thing. The whole thing is nuts. How many of you out there are dealing with the same issues? You got health care, you got Medicare, Medicaid. It's all insane. But we're taking care of all the illegals. Oh, yeah. Oh, now that's where that $135 figure. Now they get an extra $45 from me if I go to ER to help pay the way of the illegals that are going in to get freebies. Think about how many people will go into the ER at that single hospital in one day. Our higher rates are now paying for the illegals. Our higher rates of insurance are paying for the fact that we've got so many unlicensed illegal drivers running around this country with no insurance. These are the things that we are facing in this nation today. It's almost like they don't want you getting healthy. They want you curled up and die. They don't want to deal with you. It's unbelievable. It's shocking. Hey, stick around. A little different piece of music to close this hour with. I'll be back in 6-7 minutes. And I'm going to go in a different area. Stay with us.
Storable Food Company, we have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.